Rich Happel, give me a name.
Cornelius Vanderbilt.
Welcome to Give Me a Name, where a guest presents me, Ben Kirschenbaum, with a dead historical figure they find interesting, and we discuss. This is the only episode about a CNN news anchor's ancestor, until our 9-part series dedicated to Wolf Blitzer's lineage, which I actually looked up. It's actually very interesting.
What a name that is, too.
Cornelius Vanderbilt.
Is Cornelius a biblical name?
I don't know. It sounds like a biblical name.
Cornelius.
Sounds like one of the, like, St. Paul letters. No, that's Corinthians.
That's Corinthians.
Yeah.
Yeah, know your New Testament, Ben.
I didn't study up on it for this. I didn't even...
Don't forget what you said on my podcast. I'm allowed to say whatever I want about the Old Testament.
What did I say on your podcast?
I could call anything Jewish.
Rich Happel, returning to the pod.
And it's great to be here.
Oh, come on. I was recently on Rich's podcast talking about the early history of New York.
Yes.
Rich chose Teddy Roosevelt for his first guy.
A fantastic pod.
And now, one of the best.
Yep.
And now, Vanderbilt, sticking with New York.
I'm trying to stick with the New York theme.
Yeah.
Right? Until Billy Joel dies, I got to get pretty creative.
So, Vanderbilt.
Yes.
I think I've learned a lot about him. I think there's a lot of interesting things about him, but maybe number one, Staten Island.
Which, shocker out the get-go.
From Staten Island, grew up in Staten Island, and is maybe second to Pete Davidson as the most famous Staten Island guy.
I think he's the first Staten Islander to not have a vowel at the end of his name.
He changed it from Vanderbilto, actually, when he was very, very young.
I know. A Dutch family.
And, like, so it seems like he grew up poor, but not, like, ridiculously poor. But if you trace his family back, indentured servants.
150 years before he was born.
So it really, the roots are from nothing.
The roots are from nothing. He was lower middle class, it seems like.
Parents are farmers. And his dad's got a boat, which ends up being important.
Which also, like, that shows how times have changed financially for people. The lower middle class casually had a boat that he could transport people and goods on in his spare time.
Yeah, no, he's just, you know, they're getting by with their boat.
Yeah. And also, no insurance back then.
True.
You know, people just had boats.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like Staten Island is such a symbolic place to grow up in because you're looking at this metropolis, growing metropolis. So he's born in 1794. George Washington is president when he's born.
Yep.
He dies in 1877 at the age of 82. By that time, he's done business with Rockefeller. The cool thing about this guy, there's a bit of a Forrest Gumpy aspect of it where you really see 80 years of American history and how much the country changes.
Yes.
In a relatively short amount of time.
Yeah, no shrimp, but yes, overall.
There's no, well, there's boats.
There are, yeah, there's a lot of boats. There's a lot of boats.
So,
yeah, he never played football in Alabama, but.
No, but well, he starts a school in Nashville. There's a lot
That's
of
That's
true.
He does start an SEC school, which is pretty nice.
I'm creeped out by how one-to-one it is.
No, this is kind of scary.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And his wife died of AIDS.
Which is first recorded case.
Unbelievable. Yeah. So he's it lives in Staten Island, and the city is bustling. It's growing.
Yes.
It seems like his mom was kind of an interesting figure. He, like, consults with his mom later on, respects his mom. And when he is, I believe, when he is only 11 years old.
That's what I got here.
Brother dies.
Nope.
And he drops out of school.
Out of school at 11.
Yes.
Which for back then, pretty old.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Guy's a scholar.
I know. They're like 11, huh? You got the fifth grade under your belt. You're a manager.
And he, I think he went to school for like 3 months. It's actually interesting because he never really knows how to read and write. He like reads phonetically, but
right.
He's like truly an uneducated guy.
100%. He's just going by feel.
Yes.
You know? He knows enough like that.
And it's important, too, because now we think of Vanderbilt as like the ultimate old money. right? If you're a Vanderbilt, you know, that means you're blue blood, whatever.
Right, of course.
But his whole thing is that he's actually the rebel who is beating out the old money of his time, like the Livingstons and yep. people like that.
He's the opposite of Anderson Cooper.
He's the anti-Anderson Cooper.
He's the anti-Cooper.
And so it is such a like cool story of how this guy who is coming from like pretty much nothing, fighting monopolies, fighting yep. the aristocracy,
yep.
then it comes full circle. He becomes it, and certainly his family and descendants become it.
Yes. That's all. Yes, I agree so far. Okay. I have nothing to combat you on. So far, I agree 100%. My notes are matching your notes as of right now.
We're going to get some serious debate going later on when we get
about hating women.
He does. He is a bit of a misogynist.
Yeah, 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 yes, 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 yes.
He senses.
Hates his wife, hates his daughters, hates Hillary Clinton.
Does have a relationship. Okay, that's has a relationship with Victoria Woodhull. First woman to ever run for president.
Well, I don't know if you want to jump that far ahead of the story because I got some notes on that chick.
Why don't we talk about Woodhull a little bit? This is much later in Vanderbilt's life. He's already the big, you know, steamboat guy. He's already the big railroad guy.
Right. Well, he's starting to dabble in the railroads there, Ben. But
there
so
we
his
go.
Wife there dies.
We got some confrontation going.
The wife dies. So what does he do? Just like my mom, when her mom died, starts going to go to... what are they called?
Mediums. Seances. Yeah, mediums. Yeah, yeah.
And they're called the Claflin sisters.
Yes.
Claflin sisters. Starts banging the younger one.
Not, right, not Victoria. Banging
the younger
Victoria's
one,
younger sister.
Who, Tennessee was her name.
Okay.
Which, influential on Nashville, where Vanderbilt is, I don't know.
I don't think it is, but well, that'd be so funny if it was.
It's just a coincidence.
That would be so funny if he was having sex with someone named South Dakota.
Yeah, I've been banging Iowa, so I'm going to start a school in Des Moines. So he starts hooking up with her. He's going to marry this lady, and his family talks him out of it, which this is what I like. They talked him out of marrying the spiritual medium,
right,
and taught them into marrying a cousin.
Yes.
We got to remember how different times were.
Yes. No, the cousin whose name, Frank.
Frank.
Which I think the explanation was that the family thought they were going to have a boy and they were going to name him Frank, and then they had a girl and they're like, well, I could still name him Frank.
I read that... someone said that the parents promised a close friend that they would name their kid, no matter what gender,
Frank,
after them, after the friend.
Yeah, Frank is just, it's just so not unisex.
What do you think is worse, marrying your cousin or marrying a Frank?
But he did
this
both.
This guy did both. He did. That's how much money he had. He's like, yeah, I'm going to marry my cousin Frank. What the fuck you have to say about it?
That's how tough this guy was.
Yeah, this guy was a motherfucker, dude.
Talk about, yeah. He didn't just, you know, wear pink. This guy married a cousin named Frank.
And it was a woman. First trans. No, I'm kidding.
So this was much later in life. He ends up marrying Frank. Frank is from the South, and actually she's a big reason why Vanderbilt is in the South. Because
I didn't know that.
Cornelius is a northerner all the way, and actually, during the Civil War, lends ships to the Union, helps
yes.
the Union cause.
Yes, yes, yes.
But after the war, helps get Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederacy, out of jail. And
ooh.
Then he starts his college in Nashville. So basically, and it seems like a contradiction, but his big thing is that he... was pro the union of the country. He's against the South during the Civil War because he thinks that they're betraying the country.
Right.
He doesn't care about slavery.
No, couldn't care less. So, if anything, he's pro.
So he... I'm not sure if he was. It seems like he...
cheap labor, at least.
Cheap labor, for sure. It seems like... It's so interesting to me with the slavery thing that there were actually people who were just kind of agnostic about it.
Well, they're like, ah, listen, you know, it doesn't affect me. You know, they approach slavery like people now approach Yemen. They're like, yeah, whatever, you know, I don't know any.
But then they, yeah, right. But those people at least acknowledge that it's wrong. I feel like he was like...
Yeah, he was like, well,
yeah,
I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but the reason why it's makes sense that he like does stuff for the North and then does stuff for the South. After the war, he's like, all right, now the South is back in the country. I'm all about, I'm a patriot. I'm going to have everything, you know, for the country. But anyway, going back to Victoria Woodhull's sister, who he was thinking about marrying.
Right.
Victoria Woodhull, fascinating figure, runs for president.
First famous, maybe not first, but famous suffragist.
Famous suffragist. And there's rumors that they're also the first stockbrokers, female stockbrokers.
He funded them.
And he probably funded them.
Yeah.
He wasn't open about it because I don't know if he would be, he wanted to be like associated with, like, right. you know, these
For
very.
For a misogynist, that's a wild move.
Yes. To fund female stockbrokers.
Right.
Yeah. He's got some contradictions there. I'm not sure. Mm. Yeah.
All right. Well, he also was banging a lot of...
You seem very disappointed.
I know. Well, listen, I like consistency in a story. He also was banging a lot of prostitutes.
Yes.
So...
I believe had syphilis.
Didn't everyone back then?
That's what I heard. Yeah, I don't know why I said it as like a gossipy.
Yeah,
like,
I know. That's what, oh, boy.
Yeah, I think everyone did.
Yeah, that's just common.
Anyone who was everyone.
Well, that's
why
they
like
had
having,
the powdered wig.
It's like having mono in high school. Like, it just means you're not a loser.
Right. Exactly. The original COVID. All right.
So, going back to the early days, that's okay. Much, much later.
Yeah, we jumped ahead.
So, he buys his first boat when he's only 16 years old. There's stories about that where maybe he was splitting the proceeds with his parents because he's such a young kid.
Mm-hmm.
But business acumen... starts very early,
right.
makes some profit. He's very frugal, takes the money, reinvests it, gets more boats, invests in other boats. And the thing to remember about the time period is that this is like the birth of American capitalism. Like what he's doing is he's one of the pioneers of just the whole system that we now kind of take for granted, I guess.
Right. Yeah, that which is really what threw me off because I thought this is just like common, but it's not.
No.
He was like the first one to start like building a company.
The first guy who the term robber baron is.
The first tycoon.
The first tycoon, which is the name of the big biography about him. The first tycoon by T.J. Styles.
There you go.
I've listened to now many.
People talk about the book.
Yeah. I've listened to so much about. I think I've listened to more talking about the book than I may as well have just read the book.
Yeah. Well, you know. Didn't want to pay the $5.99, so.
Oh, for this one? For this mega book? This probably costs like a good $17.85.
He wrote it himself. But also, the down payment for the first boat he had, I don't know if a down payment or he just bought it outright, $100.
Pretty.
Equivalent to $1,700 today.
Yeah, cheap.
That's a cheap boat.
That's a cheap boat.
How are you floating people or goods on a $1,700 boat?
Well, it was a sailboat, which is important. So he starts off sailboats.
Yes, not steam.
Not steam yet.
No.
And he's carrying, cargo people across the Hudson, or I guess across the bay, really, from Staten Island to
the city.
Manhattan.
Yeah.
And he's building up his business a little bit. War of 1812 is really actually beneficial for him. He's still a teenager, but... Yeah. There's a need for shipping, for transporting soldiers.
Yes.
So he's starting to make a bit of a business for himself. He's starting to make some money.
But he was going for a government contract there, Ben. So because he was doing people shipping back and forth. What he was going for was the mail. He really wanted to get a government contract to ship mail back and forth. And he lost it. He didn't get it.
Which is a rare loss for him.
But early days.
Yeah, I mean... You see over and over with this guy, there's kind of a pattern of like all of this. He has competitions. He goes one-on-one against certain companies, certain people. He wins almost every time.
Yes.
There's one main exception
later on.
That's
where I have it. And he ends up winning that one.
Yeah, he kind of ends up winning that one too. So this is, are you referring to the Erie War, like in the late, much later on?
The guy when he went on vacation and the guy.
Oh, there's that one too. I guess he loses a lot. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I take that
back. We should have read the book.
So time goes on a little bit. In 1817, he starts working for a guy named Thomas Gibbons.
Yes.
And
he's a steamboat captain.
So now he's getting into steam.
Yes.
And the thing about Vanderbilt is that he's very, very good at figuring out what the new transportation technology is going to be. Steamships.
I mean, let's not give him that much credit. What options were there?
So steam.
You're making it sound like he's like, well, there's steamboats or we're going to Mars. Let's start with the steamboats first.
Yeah. All right. Maybe I'm not giving enough credit. That's like someone who's like, you know, a few years ago recruiting college players and is like, you know, this Zion Williamson.
Right.
I think he's going to.
It's like, yeah, there's only one option. It's all right, the steamboats.
Fine. Steamships. The other thing that we should say, I guess it comes a little bit later, but because of his work in sailboats and then steam, the nickname, the Commodore.
The Commodore.
Which is the highest ranking official in the Navy.
Correct.
And he gets it named after him just for selling the stuff or
just like
running
being,
a business.
Right. Just like being near water a lot.
And it, apparently they called a bunch of people Commodore, but then like once he starts making the most money, he's the Commodore.
Right.
So works for this guy, Thomas Gibbons. The reason why Gibbons is actually a pretty important person in American history is because of a Supreme Court case in 1824 called Gibbons v. Ogden.
Yep.
And this one is, I actually remember studying it in American history, because you don't study many Supreme Court cases, you know, Brown versus Board of Education, Roe v. Wade. This was one of them that was like a, you know, top 10.
Sure.
Supreme Court case.
Yeah, I don't remember, but I'll go with you. I'll go along with you.
I'll show you the list after.
Okay, yeah. I don't know what you studied, but yeah, sure.
You want to take Gibbons v. Ogden?
The only thing I had on Gibbons was he's the former mayor of Savannah, Georgia.
He is. And Ogden was the governor I think he was the governor of New Jersey. But the important thing here is, well, first of all, Gibbons and Ogden just had a business rivalry in general.
Yes.
But Ogden had control of essentially a monopoly given from the state through the Livingstons and Robert Fulton, who invented the steamship. So basically the, you know, the original
New Yorkers,
blue blood,
New
upper
Amsterdam.
Class. Yeah. That can trace their family all the way back and all that stuff. And the case is important because Gibbons wins, and essentially the Supreme Court, led by John Marshall, says that the states don't have a right to give monopolies to control interstate commerce.
Right. Yeah. So the
monopoly is gone. And it's a big case in terms of the federal government taking more control of the economy, mm-hmm. and capitalism just sort of ruling in the United States.
Right. The boys becoming more of the boys.
The boys doing what they want.
Right.
That's what it said in the dissertation.
Let the boys do what they want.
John Marshall.
Boys are being boys. So Vanderbilt starts his own thing in 1828.
Yep. Gibbons dies. Vanderbilt doesn't have any respect for Gibbons' son, who takes over.
Yep.
So Vanderbilt now really on his own. By the way, though, while he's working for Gibbons as his like steamboat captain, manager, whatever, he's still got his own business going. So this guy's like just busy as hell.
He's a hustler.
He's a hustler.
Right. And this is before texting.
Yeah.
People forget that. You have to like remember things.
Yeah. Apparently he had like all this information in his head, because again,
he can't write.
He's got to have it all in his head.
Right.
All the ledgers and all that shit going on.
Pretty impressive.
Now you're giving him credit.
Right. That I give him credit for.
But not
and
for
the misogyny. But everything else, I'm not I'm not that impressed.
Well, you weren't even impressed with the misogyny because you thought it was inconsistent.
It is inconsistent misogyny, but when he's doing it, it's pretty good.
The Commodore. All right. So he's becoming a bit of a, you know, the steamship stuff is working out. The other thing is that, like, in terms of his strategy, it doesn't seem that complicated. It seems like he just kind of cuts prices and drives other people out of business.
Right. And what we were saying before we started recording, the original sale.
Yeah.
It's, how did no one else think about this?
I think it's just developing for the first time. The other thing is that he goes up against, so some of it is that he's going up against, well, with Gibbons Ogden, you know, he's working for Gibbons, but they're going up against those state monopolies. But that kind of thing happens over and over again, where he's going up against the establishment, that before really American capitalism and companies start to take over in the mid-1800s, late-1800s, he's going against the big guy. He's the underdog, which is crazy that Cornelius Vanderbilt, the name Vanderbilt, started off as the underdog.
Right.
And representative of, like, the people. He goes against this Hudson River line that was in Albany, and he calls his ships the People's Line. because he's kind of like the Andrew Jackson. It's around the same time as Andrew Jackson, and it's like, I represent the people. I represent the little
guy. I'm from the working class. I know what's going on here.
And he's not wrong. Like,
it's a good marketing.
He's not a phony.
Right.
But then he, you know, then he just becomes extremely rich.
Well, you got to start somewhere, Ben. And this guy's starting here. The People's Line, they pay him $100,000 to leave the Hudson River and $5,000 per year to stay away.
But I guess that's my thing, because he like makes a big stink of it that like these people shouldn't rule. This is corrupt. You know, like this is, we need free trade. We need all this stuff. But then they pay him enough and he fucks off.
Yeah. But I think he just looks at it as a win.
Well, it's definitely a win for him. Yeah. The thing about,
I guess you're saying, if he was really true to his word, he'd just fucking it until they die.
Maybe? I don't know.
That's a fair point.
I got nothing. I don't know. I got nothing against what he does. I mean, the guy's whole thing in terms of, he's very economical and frugal, which I guess like any, you know, successful businessman usually
you
is
have
the case.
Pay.
He's insanely competitive. And
the most competitive.
And there are times where it feels like he's being competitive more than even looking out for his financial interests.
He just has to win.
He just has to win. What winning means, whether they buy him out or he buys them out or whatever it is, like, he sees like any opportunity to just crush. I was just rewatching The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan documentary.
I'm interested to see where this goes.
And he's exactly
even Vanderbilt, he's the Jordan of steamboats.
I guess it's an analogy that's very easy to make.
That's what they called him back then. They're like, he's the Michael Jordan of steamboats.
That's before Jordan even existed.
Right, 300 years
and before
like Jordan
Jay
was born.
Gould, that is the Isaiah Thomas of trains.
That's right.
But I think that he is a little like Jordan, just in the uber competitiveness. And then a recurring theme in The Last Dance is that Jordan keeps saying, "And I took that personally." And I took that personally. And it's like things that like no one else would take personally. He took personally to make a personal beef and then to like go after
them. Right, because he's a psychopath.
He's a psychopath. But yeah. I kind of got the same feel.
And I respect that.
I mean, it's the key to success, right. I think.
Being a psychopath, yes. Yeah. Okay, so he's doing all this in the tri-state. Going to, a little north, a little west, a little south. And then he notices the big gold rush.
The gold rush is huge. And here's, all right, maybe you'll give him credit for this. You're giving him credit for the misogyny, and you're giving him credit for the hustle.
And the syphilis.
And the syphilis. All right, now.
I don't hate this guy.
So what I'll say is another thing that he does well is he's able to recognize location-wise where the money is. When he's doing the steamship stuff, he starts taking over the New England line because that's where the textiles are. That's where the Industrial Revolution's happening. Now, in the 1840s, 1848, find gold in San Francisco or in California. And he realizes that the West is the way. And what I didn't know before doing research, the main way people got to California, biggest migration in American history, that they find gold and people just go west, was by boat, not by land.
Yeah, around the Horn of Cape May or some shit?
So, two routes. There are two routes. One is Panama.
Well, not yet. Originally.
Oh, we're talking way back.
Yeah.
So, way back, you got to go under Argentina. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Horn of Cape, call us in if you know. The Horn of Cape May, I want to say. The Horn of Cape something.
Horn of Plenty? I feel like that might be a Chinese restaurant in Manhattan.
Horn of Plenty.
No, that's
have
land
a pretty good
of
general
plenty.
Song.
That's land of plenty. I'm off on both words. The only common thing is the word of. So in any case, you go around South America. But what they figure out is that you can go Panama. So it's before the canal. So what you have to do is you got to take a boat to Panama. Then you got to take a stagecoach or maybe little boats, get to the west part, and then take another boat up to California.
Yeah.
What he wants is to do a similar thing, but instead of Panama, a little bit north, Nicaragua.
Yes, he thought it was shorter, and he could get a boat in the middle because of Lake Nicaragua.
Yes.
To get to the west. He's a smart guy.
You're liking him more and more as we go on.
Listen, I forgot about the syphilis when I first sat down.
So he starts a shipping company that does this transportation.
Yes, the accessory transit company.
And that is super successful, that it cuts some of the time, which is, you know, valuable amount of time, by going across Nicaragua instead of by going across Panama. And, you know, there's like a saying that with the gold rush, the people who made the most money weren't the people who were digging for gold, but the people who made the pickaxes.
Right.
And actually, the people who made even more than those guys were the people who transported those people.
Exactly.
People who actually were going for gold, they're the schmucks. I mean, they're pawns.
Right. They're the open mic comics of the situation.
Yes, yes. And Vanderbilt's the guy who runs the Bringer show.
Yes.
He's the guy who's pulling the strings.
Yeah. He's doing all the emails and everything. That's so inside baseball. But
everyone gets a good Bringer reference.
Everyone gets a
Anyone
Bringer
who's
reference.
Listening to this gets the Bringer reference because I probably made them come to one of my shows.
That's true also. So this made him a lot of money, Ben, to your point. But and it all goes back to, because if you control what? You control information, the mail.
Yes.
He wants the government contract for the mail.
Okay.
This time, he didn't get. Well, there's two competitors, Pacific Mail Steamship Company and the United States Mail Steamship Company. And they were running it all, but they were doing it across Panama, to your point, which took longer. So Vanderbilt's like, just give it to me. I'll go through Nicaragua and it'll be way shorter. And he gets it. And he slashed prices.
So things are going well for him, like early parts of the gold rush. And then he does something that he's never done ever. He goes on a vacation. He goes on a vacation to Europe. He gets a boat. He goes to Europe. Yep. And when he gets back, some of the people who worked for him, these two guys, Garrison and
Cornelius Garrison and Charles Morgan.
Yeah, those guys fuck him over in the company.
Yeah, dude.
And he says some intense quote where he's like, the law will take too long, I will ruin you, or like, I will...
I have it written here.
Yeah, he gives some sort of like
Liam Neeson.
It says,
gentlemen... Yes, this is the original Taken quote.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, you have undertaken to cheat me. I won't sue you, for the law is too slow. I'll ruin you. Yours truly, Cornelius Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
God, his dick must have felt so big when he was writing that.
Well,
I think
maybe, but at the same time, well, first the syphilis, but also
he also can't write.
Yeah, he also can't write. I was gonna say there's like seven misspellings on the thing. I'll also
it looks like hieroglyphics. Like, I don't even know what he was trying to say.
I said ruin, dude. Ruin has one N. What the fuck? So what ends up happening with Nicaragua is one of the most crazy stories. There are like books just written about this episode, but there's a filibuster named William Walker. And what a filibuster is at this time, don't think about the filibuster like talking a lot, and, you know, a senator talking for a long time.
Yes.
Is a guy who is like a rogue conqueror of Central America.
Which is such an insane job.
Yeah, I mean...
To overthrow government. I'm a professional government overthrower.
Well, they saw what happened in, like, Texas, for example, and they're like, oh, yeah, you could just, like, get in there with, you know, government help or without government help, conquer shit, and then eventually you become, like, this, and eventually you control it. This guy, Walker, I think, modeled himself basically over Napoleon. I don't even think he wanted to make Nicaragua part of America. I think he just wanted to create an empire.
That's all he was going for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he goes into Nicaragua through a series of, he has some men going with him and he's trying to conquer it. Eventually, he actually becomes the president of Nicaragua.
Mm-hmm.
He decides to stop Vanderbilt's trade through Nicaragua, and through a few other people, basically gets Garrison and Morgan in charge.
Well, he basically said, listen, if you support my coup, I'll fuck over Vanderbilt and give you the contract.
So Vanderbilt again wants revenge, and this time Vanderbilt essentially starts a war to overthrow Walker's government. He has a secret agent go to Costa Rica, and Costa Rica and the surrounding countries already have beef with Nicaragua.
Yep.
And they overthrow Walker.
Yeah. 1857.
So this is kind of one of the big examples of a guy who's just so rich that he can literally control international relations.
Yeah, he had the U.S. Army get him for the second time, because he also once took over Baja California.
Yeah, before
all this.
So
he was already bad boy.
So he does get his revenge on... yeah, it's Cat Bad.
Yeah, he had that tattooed on him, Bad Boys for Life.
But again, totally misspelled.
Totally misspelled.
He had the number four, which probably he could probably pull that off.
And he screwed up that one. It looked like a three.
Bad Boys, number four for life, L-Y.
That's where L-Y-F-E came yeah. from. Yeah, it's from Vanderbilt.
So so he is able to overthrow Walker. He kind of doesn't do the trade long after that. He's so powerful at this point that in Panama, those other trade routes pay him off just to not go to Panama. So he like is making money by not doing anything.
Right.
Because he's such a threat.
Right.
There was also a story when he's running the Nicaragua trade where there was an issue with the ship that was going to take them from Nicaragua to California, the second leg of the trip.
Right.
And he knew about that. And the passengers were in New York, and he sent them anyway to Nicaragua. And the reason why he did that was because he figured he would lose more money if he didn't send them and they asked for their money back for the tickets. But instead, he's just shipped them and left them in the middle of a country that they didn't know what the hell they were doing, just so that he could make a little bit more profit. The guy that doesn't give, I mean, he does some good things in the sense that he provides cheap and efficient transportation for people. Like, he does help people in a sense.
Right, he's like the Uber pool back then.
Yes. Like, he does help people, but he also doesn't really care about people.
He doesn't give a fuck about people. He hated his wife. He put her in an insane asylum.
He
you think
put
he
the
gives
first
a fuck about these people?
Well, he's a terrible family man in general.
Oh, the worst.
His first wife he sends to an insane asylum. But then I was listening to a little thing with the biographer who was saying, like, she was going a little crazy. And that's like things that they do anyway.
Yeah, her husband has syphilis from a bunch of prostitutes. I don't blame her.
But you're on descent. Yeah, I mean.
He's doing pretty well, though.
Also, apparently, when he sent her to the insane asylum, it was so that he could bang his mistress.
Of course that was the strategy. He didn't care about her well-being.
But the other thing, just in terms of class, so he starts off with the steamship thing right around this time after Nicaragua is when he's really going to start getting into trains, too.
He's pretty autistic.
There's... yeah, maybe that was...
So he's getting really into trains and he could draw the whole city by memory.
It's actually amazing. There's one story where someone drops thousands of toothpicks in front of him and he's able to count
the exact number.
Yeah.
He made his first fortune off counting the number of jelly beans in a jar. People don't talk about that.
Although he was a gambler. I don't know if he counted cards, but he was a big gambler.
Okay.
Speaks to the competition aspect of him.
Right. Why Jordan?
You don't like the Jordan analogy.
No, I like the Jordan analogy. I think it's funny that people back then are like, he's the Jordan of business.
No. Jordan is they called him the the Commodore does seem like an NBA nickname.
It does sound like an NBA.
Well, because they called David Robinson the Admiral.
There you go.
So someone had to beat Robinson by sea.
Right. Yeah. That's right.
Oh, the only other thing I was going to say, though, about lot of people in the train and steam show is that he is kind of making transportation for the people. You got to think, like, used to be a time where being transported on, like, a boat is just the rich people. But now the riffraff are in there, too.
You're right. Spirit Airlines.
Spirit Airlines. And Vanderbilt is the kind of guy who would charge way extra for a carry-on.
And you... Oh, 1,000%. The Wi-Fi did not work.
No, Wi-Fi did not work.
Never worked.
And the plane probably didn't always land correctly.
Or sometimes you didn't even take the second leg of the plane.
That's just like another point in terms of like him. He does kind of make America a little bit more...
accessible?
A little more accessible. It's interesting that he liked Andrew Jackson and he was around the same time as Andrew Jackson. Because it's a similar thing in terms of like the common man type thing.
Right.
You know, when Vanderbilt was young, the property rights requirement to just vote, there was a property rights requirement to vote for state senator of New York, mm-hmm. and then an even higher property rights if you wanted to vote for governor. So,
as it should be. And women should not be able to own land.
Well, I mean, this took a 180. Complete.
Ben, this is why I'm on the podcast. All right, I'm running for 2024.
And I'm angry about the fact that Victoria Woodhull had the gall to run for president to begin with. All right, so where are we? We're getting into trains.
Oh, also one thing I had written down, which I thought was interesting. So Walker, you know, Nicaragua, they're like, hey, get out of here, bozo. He says, all right. Tries to do it in Honduras.
Yeah, Walker doesn't stop.
He doesn't stop. And then they get him in Honduras and dies by firing squad. By the Honduran government.
Firing squad's an interesting...
It is interesting.
It makes sense. Because you don't want anyone to become guilty about killing someone.
Right.
So you do a firing squad.
I think that's fair. Yeah, right.
It's got to be tough being like an executioner where like you're the guy.
It's intimate.
It's too intimate.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right.
So a bunch of people killed Walker.
So yeah, Walker's dead. Then 1860s come along. This is like his Picasso Blue era. He's really struggling, and because it's the Civil War, Ben.
It's a Civil War. He helps out the Union Army. His son dies.
His name?
His name was George Washington?
It was.
Yeah. One of his heroes.
George Washington Vanderbilt. And how did he die?
He died not... He never saw combat. I think he just died from disease.
Malaria, yeah.
Malaria, yeah.
How do you remember all this?
I don't know. I read it up. I'm telling you. I read impressive. A lot about reading a lot about the biography.
It's very, very impressive.
But, and this, in general, we could talk about him as like a father. Jumping ahead a little bit, when he dies, he gives 95% of his wealth to his oldest son. He has 13 kids in general. 11 live to adulthood.
Yes.
And most of them are alive by the time he dies, and he gives it all to the son who like worked with him in business. And yeah. There's huge lawsuits and all this stuff by the other daughters and his surviving wife, but...
He had $105 million when he died, gave $90 million to the one son, who he hated originally.
Yeah, he made a big comeback, that son.
Big comeback.
There's another son he had.
Shitty farm in Staten Island into a profitable situation, and he just...
And there's another son he had named Cornel, the guy named after him,
yep.
Who was, I think he had epilepsy and was a gambler.
Yeah, alcoholic gambler.
Yeah,
he was also put in an insane asylum.
Yeah, so father, husband, all that stuff, probably not great, but who is that's this, like, ruthless?
Right.
It's not shocking that, like, he was a bad father.
You want a comfortable wife or you want a good dad? As someone that had a good dad... Because my wife isn't a bad option.
And then, yeah, so he gives all of it to the oldest son. Also, big thing for him, the Vanderbilt name. You know, there's a reason why he's given money to the boy and the Vanderbilt name. Also, we should say, he's pretty, like, he's not a very showy guy. So all those Vanderbilt mansions and that, you know, people visit throughout the country, he did start Vanderbilt University. He gave, it was like the biggest... charitable donation ever up until that point.
I think it was $1 million.
And
yep.
And so that's also, by the way, in terms of charity, other than that, the guy like did hardly anything. He's not like Carnegie or one of those. So he gives money for that, for the university, but all the houses you see, the mansions and all that stuff, those were made by his descendants. He didn't make any of that stuff. That's more like the showy, like the people who, the grandsons and the great-grandsons and all that stuff. So 1860s, trains after the war, gets into that Erie Wars thing.
Yes.
Basically, briefly in 1868, his big rival at this point is Jay Gould. And Jay Gould and he fight over the Erie Railway. Mm-hmm. And this, again, is him like realizing where the most money is. He wants a train route, and a lot of people do, the train route connecting the East to Chicago.
Yes.
Then he kind of loses the Erie Wars, like the Jay Gould and his guys sort of take over that railway. But then he buys a different railway, and this was that story that I sent you over, which is kind of also like illustrative of just who he was and how much power he had, where there's a Lakeshore Railway, and he owns a lot of it. And there's a guy named Lockwood who is like allied with Jay Gould and he owns a lot of it. And Vanderbilt, to fuck over Lockwood and his rivals, essentially sells off a ton of his stock at like the exact right moment, bankrupts Lockwood, and then rebuys all the stock at a cheap price and buys Lockwood. So gets revenge on that one. Interesting thing about that is that he did that when he knew that a financial panic was about to happen potentially. Mm-hmm. So he essentially risked the entire American economy on this just to save it when he buys back up all that stock. He takes a loan from England or somewhere bank in England and like buys back up. So the guy is just like, first of all, he controls everything, which is crazy that just one guy can control that much. But also,
do you think he knew?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, he probably did.
And I think that there's a bit of a power trip aspect for all these guys.
Well, like, that's why you're in it.
Like Rockefeller, who comes later, is very much sort of a, he's got a huge God complex and he's giving back. So he's basically like, I'm the guy who should rule the world and I'll do it good. Like I'll be good at it, mm-hmm. but I'm the guy.
Right. I'm the best guy.
I'm the best guy to do it.
Right.
Which I guess is just the rationale for a lot of,
I mean, most things,
tyrants. Yeah. He dies kind of from exhaustion when he's 82.
Yeah, so it was a long, slow death.
Yeah.
All right? He used to throw water bottles at his physicians when they tried to help him. He tried to fight the media. The media. He tried to fight an intangible object. Because they were waiting outside of his house to like get the story of his death. And he's like, I'm going to get these bitches. He tried to kill him as he's dying.
That's amazing how much he's grown. When he's younger, he's like getting into a ton of fist fights. He's also a huge dude. He's like 6 feet and he's like well built.
And back
like
then, that. 6 feet was like...
No, 6 feet, he's towering.
Yeah, 18
feet tall. Dare I say the Michael Jordan analogy?
I mean, Jordan, come on, folks.
Yeah, he goes from like beating the shit out of people to beating the shit out of concepts.
Yeah. That's how much money he got. He could destroy capitalism and the media.
So you had your second choice. You chose Teddy. You chose the, you know, one of the most colorful figures in American history for your first choice.
Yes.
Cornelius Vanderbilt. Why him?
Why him? Well, I wanted to do, who did I want to do?
Rockefeller.
Originally? No. The guy who designed Long Island and the
city. Oh, Robert Moses.
That's originally who I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Just because there's a lot of racism in that story.
Juicy stuff.
But Vanderbilt, just because I grew up on Long Island and Great Neck, they have the Vanderbilt Mansion, back to your point, which I always thought he lived there, I guess not. And that's what made me think of him. I was like, okay. What about him?
Anderson Cooper fan? Gloria Vanderbilt fan?
Well, and then that also got me thinking, because Anderson Cooper is like supposedly the last Vanderbilt.
Right.
Right, they have no more money.
Yeah, the descendants fucked up. Yeah,
so I was like, oh, why don't we learn about how they started the money? And because now you're at the last one, and he's got some. But I guess the rest of the family has nothing.
That New Year's Eve thing, I bet, makes bank on that.
Yeah, well.
I think he's losing money on Anderson Cooper 360.
I know Andy Cohen really fucked him over that, but... Yeah, it was just one of those American heroes you always hear about. You know, no one really talks about him, I feel like.
Yeah, and he's kind of the first one. I mean, John Jacob Astor comes before him, so maybe you could say he's the first one. But Vanderbilt, in terms of the, and you know, it's always hard to make the comparisons with how much money he had, but the stat that I read was that like if he sold all of it, if he somehow were able to sell all of his assets, he would take one out of every $20 of American dollars in circulation.
Today or back then?
Back then. That's compared to like the richest people today, where it'd be more like one out of every $100 or maybe even more.
Right.
Like he's proportionally a bigger deal than, you know, Bezos or Musk or whatever.
Well, if the $105 million estate he had, if you were to put in today's dollars, $200 billion.
I think Rockefeller's the only guy who beats him.
I think Rockefeller.
201, I don't know.
It's more.
Yeah, whatever.
That's technically more.
I think Rockefeller is considered richest man ever in America.
Okay.
Or richest man ever, minus a king or a queen or something
like that. That African king, I think, was the wealthiest guy ever. He was like a trillion. I forgot what his name is. Mansa Musa?
Not sure.
Call us in.
Yeah.
But, yeah, for Americans, Vanderbilt at the top. I also, like, didn't really know anything. I knew the school.
Yeah.
I knew the house. That's all you know. I didn't know about the steamboats and the railroads.
Yeah, he gets less play than, because he comes the generation, he does intersect with Rockefeller while Rockefeller is still kind of on the rise.
Right.
But Rockefeller, Morgan, J.P. Morgan, Carnegie, you know, those guys, they're building off of what he started. You know, he's the OG.
And it's such simple concepts. Like, I couldn't imagine living back then and being like, you hear about this thing called the fucking railroad? And you're like, that's not going to take off. There's no way that could take off.
But I think that...
Like, it's such an obvious... Like, the investments he made were so obvious.
But I think he's also a guy who the economy is becoming more abstract. Like, securities and like... concepts like, you know, even just like banks and investments and all this stuff,
okay.
It's becoming less like, oh, I own this thing, I'll sell it to you, I'll make money from it. And he seemed to be one of the first guys to understand this abstract economy, things that have no inherent value and how to manipulate it.
Like shares.
Oh, I thought you were saying like Cher. I was like, what?
Oh, she's got value, let me tell you. She's a talent.
She's got pipes. Yeah.
No, I guess I understand what you mean, like how he's basically playing. But I also didn't understand, and this is just me not knowing like finances.
Sure.
Like, how can you just buy shares of a company, especially then when it was private? Like, how did he just get the shares to like make himself president of the railroad company and then kick out everyone else? Like, eventually you would think like they'd be like, no, you can't.
Well, that's the other thing. Like, so your guy, Teddy, is the one who is famously starting to crack down, you know, Trust Buster and stuff. Yeah. But that's way later.
Right.
When Vanderbilt's in play, there's really not many rules going around.
Right.
And the other thing that I found interesting is, like, now we can sit, this is something that biographer said, now it's the conservative point of view to want free trade and government to not be involved. But back then, it was like, that was like this radical idea to have free trade and take power away from monopolies and those landed aristocracy people.
Yeah.
So that also kind of flipped over time.
One thing I did have here that I thought was interesting during my second wife's name was Frank. No, it was. he originally was 100% into steamboats. Well, maybe not 100%, 98% into steamboats, like 2% into trains or the railroad. Reason being, there was a big train crash in New Jersey.
The train crash is huge. This is when he's in his like 30s, 40s.
Right. 1833.
He almost dies in this train crash.
Breaks his leg.
And I think he's like spitting up blood. Like, it's bad.
And so he was like, fuck these trains.
But eventually he got over it because he saw there was a lot of money in it.
Right, right, right.
Also on that train, John Quincy Adams. Same train.
I thought you were going to say Jordan.
Michael Jordan. Yeah,
like,
Jordan.
Oh, shit, huh?
Had an away game against the Cavs. Yeah. He just had to
send down to Atlantic City.
Yeah, right. It's Rodman after game six.
Yeah.
All right, man. Thank you so much for coming back on the pod.
Oh, that's it.
Listen to The Happel Hour.
The Happel Hour. Ben was on 2 weeks ago, maybe a week. When does this come out?
Nah, I don't know. In the future, yeah.
In the future. Ben was on at one point a couple times.
And love the Happel Hour. I'm a proud subscriber. 5 stars. Leave a review for that.
Leave a review for this if you haven't. It's weird people that listen that don't leave the review. Leave the review.
Yeah, leave the review.
It's not going to kill you.
And Rich, thank you. Always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me. This is fun.